Thank you to our two presenters. Let's open the floor to questions.
Thank you very much to both speakers. I'd like to direct my question to Jonjo. Jonjo, to what level does tribal politics play an important part in how Truth and Reconciliation Commissions should or could be considered? What challenges are faced by the traditional tribal programs that are in place now?
Thank you. tribal or ethnic politics defines not just Truth Commission, but it defines Kenya as a whole. you will be aware about, going back to pre-independence, the British method of dividing and ruling the country, and that basically has continued to define our entire political outlook, particularly after the reintroduction of multi-partyism. In 1992, all the parties that were formed after the constitution was amended to reintroduce multi-partyism were formed along ethnic lines, and that remains the same to this day. So that in the end, even when we've had an important landmark election like last year, where the third president was retiring and the new president was coming in, the political formations are still determined by the ethnic groupings who now form coalitions based on their numerical strengths. And right now, Kenya is really being ruled by the Kalenjin and the Kikuyu, who came together not in a principled coalition, but in a coalition really driven by the fact that both the person who ended up being elected president, Kenyatta, and his deputy, are facing charges at the International Criminal Court, and they actually came together with that one item of the agenda to defeat that process, and they've done a very good job of using their position to do so. So when it comes to the Truth, Justice and Reconciliation Commission, the same dynamic is at play. On the one hand, we would have liked it to be a vehicle for helping us to dig through what has happened in the past. But even as that digging through is taking place, it is still going to be informed not just by cold justice, but justice as defined by the inter-ethnic relationships between the various ethnic groups, particularly the big five ethnic groups, because Kenya has a total of 42, but it's really the big five that have defined the political fortunes of the country.
And if I may follow up, does that then mean there will be, it's unlikely that there will be general buy-in from those who are not part of that coalition?
There'll be general what?
There won't be buy-in. There won't be belief in that system.
Excuse me. I think there can be buy-in, particularly because the rest of the country has also suffered injustices, particularly when it comes to marginalization. There are places that, like in the coast which have been dominated by the dominant ethnic groups, particularly the Kikuyu, who settled and bought land during the rule of the first president. And in the Rift Valley, we have similar dynamics. Northeastern province has had a problem not just of marginalization, but also of state-sponsored violence. So those groups had looked to the Truth Commission to bring some form of justice and closure. So there would be buy-in if they felt that this was a genuine process. But what has ended up shortchanging them, I should actually say, is not even so much the ethnic dynamics as the political elite that basically do not want a reckoning with the past, mainly because I talked about earlier about a lack of a transitional moment. The political elite that has been running Kenya has not changed since independence. And so you've got the third president, for instance, under whom the Truth Commission was set up, was the one who was busy signing detention without trial orders of those who ended up being tortured in Nyayo House. So the issue really here, even for those communities that are not among the dominant ones, the issue for them, I don't think, is that they think that they can't get justice because of their ethnicity. More likely is that they can't get justice because those who would be probed are those who are still in power even today.
Thank you, and for the linguistic correction.
Okay. I have a question for Aldo Marchesi, and perhaps more than one question in one, but it is very puzzling to me that in a country like Uruguay, where in 1980 a referendum by the military in the middle of their power was voted against by the Uruguayan society. That referendum was meant to change the constitution in favor of the military government. A country where the wife of the current president, correct me if I'm wrong, was the most voted senator in the last elections, where the president of a country is one of the most symbolic prisoners of the military. A referendum against the amnesty law protecting the military is voted against by the same population, by the same society. I wonder, my question actually refers more to what seems to me a surrealistic situation here. What's the position of the ruling party, of the ruling of the leadership within Frente Amplio with regards to these referendums on the law of amnesty?
Let's ask two small questions for Aldo. What was the role of testimonies in the two government commissions that you discussed? And then the other is, you showed us two photos of La Libertad Penitentiary, and the first photo looked black and white, and you referred to it as a lieu de mémoire. And then you later showed us La Libertad today. And so I wonder in what way you're considering this a lieu de mémoire. Are you saying that ironically, in the sense that people are not remembering that La Libertad was used for political prisoners? Or are you saying that they're indifferent? That it was used for political prisoners, or is it a lieu de mémoire in the sense of lieu desmemoriado, mm-hmm. say without memory? Thank you.
Well, I mean, the first question is a big mystery, and it is really difficult. It is almost a traumatic issue for academics in Uruguay. Try to respond this kind of. Try to explain the behavior of voters. Try to explain how they deal with the authoritarian legacy and the authoritarian regime. And it is true what you are saying, that you have two plebiscites, one in 1980 that where most people vote against the dictatorship. And then you have, in 1989, the plebiscite where people vote to support the amnesty law. I said before that we still need to do some kind of more research on the voters, basically. Try to understand the geography of this election, try to understand which were the different approaches of the voters to understand this process. But I think that there are two kind of behaviors to the legacy of authoritarianism. I think that there is an important part, there was and there is an important part of the population that just bought the idea of reconciliation, but understanding reconciliation as silence, as closing of the past. People who have democratic values, mainly from the center of the ideological spectrum, but you can find around 20-30% of the population who think that it is not necessary to talk about the past to consolidate a new democracy, and it is risky to talk about the past also. This kind of argument worked for a lot of people, even for some people on the left. And also you have another thing that Marcia talked about, the Guatemala case, that I think that in Latin America right now there are a lot of historians doing this kind of job, that still we need to do more work about this, that you have that this experience of authoritarianism have an important impact on certain sectors of the people. And they created some kind of loyalties, and they create some kind of consensus regime under authoritarian conditions that after the authoritarianism became democratic, there were some groups of population that had a good memory about this experience. No? Sometimes it's very difficult to deal with that, but we have this in Uruguay, in Chile, in Paraguay, in many countries. No? So I think at least it's not a definitive response, but at least that you have to think who were the guys who voted for the amnesty, and you can say that there are two main groups. One is related to the people who don't have bad memories about the authoritarianism. That could be around 30% of the population. And then you have this kind of group that thought that talk about the past could be risky. About the last election, it was really interesting because Mujica won with the 51%. And the last plebiscite, the last, yes, it was a referendum. The last referendum was at the same time. And the referendum to revoke the law had 48%. And Mujica won with 51. It was very close. No? Some members of the Frente Amplio, of the left coalition, they don't push for the revocation. I mean, they just say, okay, we are agree with, but they are not very interested because right now are part of the political class and they don't want to have problem with the army. It's more a very pragmatic assumption that if you continue with this, you will have problems with the army. About testimony, yes, during both truth commissions, there were no hearings, no public hearings or public testimonies. Most of the work was related to archives, to state archives, and to try to recollect the what happened with the bodies of the disappeared. But there was any kind of public ritual in terms of people talking about their experience. I never thought about that, but it's a very different experience from other countries. Maybe it's something related to the political culture, I don't know, but it's interesting. And about the uses of the image of Libertad, Yes, the first one, the first picture I took from the Nunca Más, from the Nunca Más report. No? And it was used by many times in the 80s and 90s, like, look at, this is the symbol of suffering, violation against human rights, blah, blah, blah. And then, in the last years, there are pictures, you can see pictures of Libertad in the news, but in other pages, that are the pages of security, no? Criminality. But people don't establish any kind of connection. It seems that it's like there are two different realities. No? It's weird. I have a public debate with a politician about that, so I have something to tell you then.
So that wraps it up. Thanks for another good panel. Thanks for everybody who participated and who came. What we are trying to collect PowerPoints and various other things from the participants. We'll definitely have a general synthetic report, so keep your eyes peeled on the ISID website. And thank you all for coming. And a recording, that's right. Which is one of the reasons we have to close on time, because we ran out of tape.